the general rule of thumb is that people will click 80 links before they ever contact a business, whether that's picking up the phone or submitting a contact us form. Our job is to give them as many of those 80 clicks by letting them choose their path and having ready answers at every step.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Have you had challenges engaging with your customers? Do you lose prospects just because you could not call them timely? Do you have challenges in finding net new prospects? Do you have capacity issues in your sales department? How deeply do you understand how your prospects may be interacting with your website? These are the questions you will have if you are ready for marketing automation. In today's episode, we have our guest, Dave Meyer from Busy Web, who describes how marketing automation works and why that is important to understand customer journeys. He also explains how marketing automation helps engage with existing customers and find net new prospects. Finally, he shares several stories related to growing businesses using marketing automation. Let me introduce Dave to you. Dave Meyer helps high-trust businesses entering their growth phase to attract, engage, and delight their audiences to close more business. His company, Busy Web, brings leads and sales to clients using inbound marketing, optimized websites, and digital conversion strategies. He's a speaker for Google's Grow with Google program and a certified trainer for HubSpot. He was named 2016 Entrepreneur of the Year by the Twin West Chamber of Commerce in Minneapolis. And since 1999, his company has helped hundreds of clients generate buzz without getting stuck. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. So delighted to be here.
Of course, it's our pleasure as well. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus these days?
Absolutely. Well, I'm the owner of a company called BusyWeb. We're a marketing agency, and I've been doing this for 22 years. So it's been a passion of mine for as long as I can remember, really, that businesses need help getting the connections and the leads that they need in order to sell. And there's so much junk in the agency world, in marketing. If you Google for SEO or any of the big topics that people talk about in marketing, there's millions and millions of results and not a lot of real detail and not a lot of things that are actually actionable, especially in the manufacturing world and at kind of that top level where people can really get what's happening and what it really means. It's easy to bury the meaning of marketing and what you're trying to do. And at the end of the day, we're just trying to get more business. We're trying to get more leads. We're trying to close those leads through a thoughtful process. And all of the other stuff that complicates it just frustrates the heck out of me. And that's why I'm in business.
Okay, amazing. So obviously, I want to dig deeper into each of that. We want to understand this at a deeper level. But before we do that, we have a standard question. And that is going to be your perspective on growth, Dave. What does growth mean to you?
So growth for me is the act of moving forward in a thoughtful way that's going to allow you to scale your business. So growth for most of my clients, right? And I'm in manufacturing and I do the demand generation and conversion for those companies. Most of my companies are trying to go beyond what they've done in the past by doing something differently, right? What got you here isn't going to get you there. And so they're really looking for that inflection point. And for me, growth is that inflection point that lets me do more with the same or even less input into my system, because I know that my system is doing my follow-ups for me, and I have a repeatable process that I can use and that I can rely on to keep moving forward with my business through more leads, through more contacts, through more connections, and through better follow-up. So long way to say, growth is more.
Okay, amazing. So obviously, we are going to be talking about the marketing automation in today's episode because that's your background, right? And we need to understand what you can do from the marketing automation perspective and how that might be able to help with the inflection point. But in your opinion, since you do a lot of marketing automation and every company is going to be different, every customer is going to be different, and there is this notion of interaction with machine versus interaction with human. Typically, sales and marketing is always best done with a human because you can provide the personalized experience. So why do you believe that, number one, the marketing automation is going to be providing the better experience for the customers? And secondly, where it is going to be a fit? Do you believe marketing automation is going to be fit for all the businesses, or there are going to be certain businesses for which marketing automation would not make sense?
Sure. Great question, Sam. And the answer is, you know, a couple of points as well. So I think for automation in general, it's never going to be a one-size-fits-all connection. And different businesses have different levels of interaction, different give and take. For a lot of sales organizations inside of businesses, they rely on conversation, right? You need to ask great questions in order to elicit the kinds of responses that are going to lead to a sales conversation. So great automation is the act of asking those great questions and then providing information based on what those questions are. So I'm not setting up a chatbot that just has millions of inputs and millions of outputs. What I'm doing is I'm specifically working with my best script for my intended audiences, working from my marketing personas. And marketing persona is a fancy word for having an idealized customer in mind. So for a lot of manufacturing businesses, it's probably purchasers or decision makers in the C-suite. What are those people really concerned about? And we try to get into the psychology of that. And based on what a CFO is looking for when they're trying to find a better provider for one of my clients, then what do I need to ask in order to elicit that response? Those are the kinds of questions that you want to backfill. So what does a good sale day look like for you? Or what does the best customer you've ever had share with your next customer, and trying to figure out what those things are. And then it's a conversation. And so my job in automation, when it's done correctly, is asking those questions and then knowing what the answer is in advance. So it's almost like a choose your own adventure. You remember those books when we were kids, you would open it up and it was Encyclopedia Brown or whatever. You go to page 3 and does Encyclopedia Brown want to go to, what does he want to open the door to the dungeon? Does he want to run screaming out of the house, or does he want to insert option 3? We want to have each of those three options for our customer. Customer wants to come up and say, I'm interested in this tool. And then you ask them, well, what does success look like for you? Is it more leads? Is it more connections? Is it saving money? Based on their answer, say if it's saving money, you go into filling them up with information that is going to be additive instead of distractive. And so what I mean by that is, am I giving them more of what they're looking for, or am I trying to force fit my product, my solution into the conversation? And if you take it all the way back, let's go to like an elementary school as a example. You know, do you want a red crayon or a blue crayon? Well, I want a red crayon. That's great. Red crayons are the best for you because of XYZ. But that doesn't really match what the customer is trying to do because I'm trying to force fit the narrative. Instead, if I say, that's great, a lot of our customers have found that red crayons are helpful in these three directions. Does any of that resonate with you? And then offering up another path to go to additional engagement. For most business-to-business communication, it's the general rule of thumb is that people will click 80 links before they ever contact a business, whether that's picking up the phone or submitting a contact us form. Our job is to give them as many of those 80 clicks by letting them choose their path and having ready answers at every step.
Okay, amazing. So let's talk about the whole journey. I think you are touching a very important point there with respect to journey of the customer. But let's distinguish a bit, because marketing automation could be for net new customers or the prospects, or it could be for the existing customers. And in my understanding and opinion, I think those two journeys are going to be very different, right? So yes. Let's talk about which one are you talking about here? Are you talking about net new? And if you are talking about net new, how the net new is going to be different from the existing customer marketing automation?
Yes. So great question. And the difference between a net new customer and someone that already knows you, perhaps a existing customer, is of course the existing customer is 10 times easier to close an additional deal on. Yeah. And the traditional marketing funnel tends to forget about existing customers. If you think about the analogy of a funnel, what happens with the funnel? You pour lots of stuff in, and then a little bit of stuff comes out the bottom. If you treat that funnel as a one and done, the water's through the funnel, now I don't care anymore, you're missing out on a ton of opportunity. And so I like to try to shift with my customers the analogy from funnel for marketing to flywheel. And a flywheel is a matter of storing energy, right? It's what Amazon did by helping to lower the friction between each point. You know, they found great products. They made it easier and cheaper to get those products, and they made it easier for people to buy those products. And it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. We need to do the same thing with our customers. So we want to attract customers in new ways, new connections, having the traditional marketing, the advertising, the pay-per-click stuff, the search engine optimization or helping you rank better on Google, all of those things fill up attract, but then you need to engage. And engage is where that next level, the conversations start, where some of that marketing automation can help ask additional and thoughtful questions that are going to lead back to delight. So the three phases of a flywheel are attract, engage, and delight. And delight becomes magic because that treats every new customer, along with every existing customer, as someone who's still in play, someone who you're still interested in working with, and someone that you can still add value to. And so if I'm thinking about those people, if I'm asking them thoughtful questions, if I'm thinking, okay, well, what is my best customer going to need next after they've already started doing business with me, that dramatically opens up the amount of new business that you can get, new big air quotes, new business, because it's with existing customers. But it's also so much easier. You don't need to spend hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of dollars on an ad campaign to reach somebody that already knows you because you have their email address and they already know you. And the barrier to re-entry is much lower than if you're trying to work with someone that you've never worked with before. And in most B2B, there's a high trust factor. And so once I've built up that trust by forging an existing relationship, it makes it so much easier to resell or to add additional services and deepen relationships.
Okay. So Dave, as you know, my role in this conversation is going to be, I'm actually trying to act as a CFO because that's my target listener, right? So I'm actually trying to connect the dot for them because they are not going to have as much marketing background. So for them, it might be slightly harder to follow these things from the marketing perspective. So do you have any specific story? So let's say if I'm the manufacturer, right? And there is this kind of notion in the manufacturing community. And obviously I speak to a lot of different marketers as well. And they seem to think, or they think that, you know, manufacturing community is primarily trade show driven. They don't do as much either marketing automation or the digital marketing or the SEO. They are not driving as much traffic from the SEO perspective. So let's pick some stories, because I, as a CFO, if I have some sort of story or a situation, then I'll be able to relate more just because I know that how the flow is going to work for either for my colleague or for myself. Right. So let's say if you were to answer this question in the form of a story, right? So tell me, if I'm the new manufacturer and I've, let's say, never done any sort of marketing automation, I don't have as much understanding of the digital marketing, and you are trying to coach me, okay?
Yes.
How to start on the marketing automation? What are the things that I need to know to start on the journey of the marketing automation? So how would you do that?
Perfect. Yes. And absolutely. I have a fantastic example from an existing client of ours that we've worked with for the past 3 years and that was dramatically disrupted by COVID, you know, over the past couple of years. You know, I don't know when listeners are listening in on this particular conversation, but right now we're talking in March 2021. We've been in this COVID thing for a year. And for manufacturers, in particular, this customer, they were doing everything right. You know, we had marketing that we were doing, but they also did a ton of trade shows and they were on the road quite a bit. As everyone that's done a trade show knows, there's a significant investment in travel, in setting up the beautiful booths, in setting up meetings, and just in handling all of the interactions that happen inside of a booth. What most manufacturers tend to think is that just being there is somehow magically going to get them the business. If you don't have a wonderful sales team that's proactively going out and shaking hands and engaging, and you have great giveaways and things to engage and bring people in, the likelihood that you're going to get real actionable leads is kind of low for a trade show. Now, you're just kind of sitting there with several dozen or several hundred other businesses that are all trying to do the same thing right alongside you. So how can you be more thoughtful with that? And with this particular customer, they had a Bible that they looked at. It was a manufacturing tolerances that listed every little thing that you needed to know about the requirements for pressing, you know, thin sheet aluminum versus thick sheet. Or another example client, you know, we have a printed circuit board maker. And so all of the different things that go into rapid prototyping, right? So the juxtaposition between traditional old school marketing of just going to a trade show, which trade shows are high target environments, or, you know, rich target environments where there's a lot of people that are theoretically there to buy, but there's a lot of competition and you need to be really thoughtful in your follow-up. And so what we found with our customers is, especially once the bottom fell out and they literally couldn't meet at these trade shows anymore because all the shows were canceled, we had to backfill that activity with something. And so what we did is we just came up with an email marketing campaign that took advantage of all of the existing customers and contacts that they already had in their CRM, their customer relationship management database. In this case, the customer was working in a tool called HubSpot, very easy to use, integrates with all kinds of other marketing and other things. We dovetailed what we knew about our customers and we sent out a message to the people that we already knew and sent them the Bible, that manufacturing tolerances book. But here's where it gets interesting. That book was separated into several different sections on kinds of things that you could do in precision manufacturing. Were you sourcing material? Were you trying to engineer new parts? Were you looking for rapid prototyping? Based on each of those options, we knew where that person looked at the document. So in the tools that we have, if they downloaded that PDF, we knew how long they spent on each given page. So we know they went to the precision stamping page and they stayed there for like 35 minutes. That triggered an automatic deepening relationship where we sent them another message, perhaps a blog post, or maybe even a demo video, helping them break down and answer the questions that we knew they were probably asking. That's much more scalable than even having a salesperson grabbing a business card and calling someone and having a conversation, right? So now all of a sudden, our website, our marketing, our email tools, and our CRM are all working together to proactively and thoughtfully follow up with those targets. So that makes it much more scalable and repeatable. And on the backside as well, the sales team all of a sudden had exactly what they were looking for. They went from what we call marketing qualified leads, or just visits into the system, to sales qualified leads, which means that our team was actively vetting each one of those contacts. Are they likely to actually turn into a deal? And then the sales management was able to look at it and say, okay, well, Bob on our team has been connecting with 18 people a week in this particular section in the precision manufacturing world. And so we know that Bob is doing his job, but it looks like Jim has had some trouble. Jim's only made 4 calls in the past week, or he left 4 voicemails but didn't actually get through to anyone. How can we help Jim get more information and give him more of what he needed? So we bolstered that part of that job to help Jim get what he needed. And so we gave him additional white papers or process sheets. We actually had the sales team coach him on what he needed to do. And so it gives you a lot more data and helps you be much more thoughtful inside of the entire sales process. So that's kind of the new way of doing this and the way that you can use marketing materials and a CRM and an automated process to make sure that you're not dropping any balls. Another example from a customer of mine is, you know, they were using Post-it notes and Excel spreadsheets to keep track of all of their deals. Every month they would have a trade show. They would get a big data dump from that trade show on everybody that attended, and they would send out the entire trade show worth of people, you know, the 2,000 people that attended that show, a blast email saying, hey, we do our thing and here's what we do and you should work with us.
Yeah.
Not very engaging. And there's a word for that. I'm based in Minneapolis. Minneapolis and Minnesota is actually the home state of spam. Actual food, right? So that's spam. And whenever you're sending people stuff that they haven't asked for, that they're not interested in, that's spam. Convert or juxtaposing that to, I know that I'm interested in this particular thing, and someone is sending me information on that particular thing that I've expressed interest in, and then doing thoughtful follow-up. It's an entirely different conversation. And it's very much the difference between the old school traditional car salesman with the dancy gorilla on top of the building and trying to go in and saying, hey, you need the undercoating and all that. And the juxtaposition of that with someone that takes the time to educate their customer on the benefits of doing something in the way that they can. Right. So it's the difference between always talking about yourself as a business and meeting the needs of the customer and showing them how you can help them be successful in their world.
OK, so I'm actually going to have two follow up questions on the story. Obviously, amazing story. But let's say if I think from the CFO's perspective and you are comparing this situation with a trade show. In my opinion, I don't think it's a fair comparison, and I'll tell you why. Because in this particular case, what you did is you basically targeted the existing customers. In case of a trade show, if I'm going to a trade show, obviously I'm probably going to meet some of the existing relationships, but my primary goal is to generate net new business. If I already have the relationships with somebody, then I can do dialing and I can talk to them and do the follow-up, right? That's the easy part. But typically, net new is going to be slightly more difficult part. So do you have any story in which you did this with net new prospect as well, where let's say you did not have their emails, and what was the process of getting them engaged on the content? So describe the whole process from the beginning to the end, how you can generate net new business using these efforts.
Absolutely. And you're 100% right. You know, it's easy to say your trade shows are awful and you can't do them anyway. But conversely, on the flip side, doing thoughtful digital, A, it's the only thing you can do right now, but B, it's very easy to target based on who you know you're trying to reach. So in the trade show world, and again, if I'm a CFO and I'm looking for what's my biggest ROI, my biggest return on investment for spending this money to find new leads, right now, it's kind of a moot point, but even if it wasn't, the act of going out and trying to find people and just kind of hoping that they're going to walk by versus a targeted LinkedIn campaign where I'm going for exactly the right people is an entirely different conversation. And so what I'm doing a ton of with my customers right now is we're going deep into the marketing personas, right? The idealized versions of who my best buyer is. And we're looking at who are they? What roles do they fill in their organizations? What are their demographics? Where are they physically located? What are their businesses and what do those businesses do? And probably most importantly, what are the problems that we solve for those people? And so if I'm doing dedicated, thoughtful targeting, you know, using LinkedIn Sales Navigator can be incredibly helpful on this because I know that my best customer is a purchasing officer at a Fortune 500 company that's responsible for sourcing stamped plastics. Okay, so that gives me a bunch of keywords to work from. And then I can go out and specifically target that group with what I know they're asking. You can look at keywords and keyword research. And so in Google speak, you know, anything that people type into Google in order to find something about a business or a service is a keyword. And so if I know that people are searching for specific things, say it's precision stamping, rapid prototyping, then I go in and I can look for what those people are looking for. But then most importantly, I can see what they're doing after they interact with me. So if you have a tool, again, my favorite is HubSpot. If someone clicks on a link that I've done or that I've created out of my LinkedIn lead generation campaign, you know, I've targeted a bunch of purchasing officers in a different level at a company. And it's almost like I'm targeting three or four different kinds of people at my target accounts. That's called ABM or account-based marketing. So I'm looking at specific accounts and saying, okay, for this business, I know that these three people are going to interact with my purchase, are going to be the decision maker, the detractor, and probably the line level person that's going to be actually interacting with me. What are those three kinds of people looking for? I generate the content that they're going to be searching for in my blog on my website. And I make a post on LinkedIn that backs up, here are the three things that we can do. And it's very solution oriented and gets them right to what we can do to solve. And what I'm trying to get to for each of those accounts is they type the problem that they're having into Google, into LinkedIn, or just ask their friends and the other people that they know in the industry, and we show up as a business. And so it's the level of detail that you can get and the measurability of all of these things that really seems to speak to CFOs in the business. So for finance officers that are really looking at what's the ROI of every nickel that we spend, if I can say that 33% of this kind of marketing results in a lead that's actionable for us and that our sales team can dig into, that's a much easier new sell, or it's easier to keep doing that particular activity if I know that that's the kind of result that I'm getting. And by the way, I can look at it and kind of broad spectrum say, yes, this kind of interaction, the dedicated LinkedIn connections and emails followed up by our inbound marketing campaign or the act of giving them more information and helping them do a choose your own adventure until it makes sense for us to call them proactively. That's far more productive than just doing cold calling or the last time we purchased a marketing list of people in our industry. We found that 23% of our links were just dead, that the people weren't anymore at that position, or that the email bounced, right? It just went out and never got to anyone. Another 5%, they actually did click on it, but then the other 80% of folks never opened our email. Conversely, I can see that what I've been doing in other areas has either a higher or lower conversion rate. So it lets you make fact-based decisions based on the data that you're collecting about what people are actually doing. Very hard to do in an in-person relationship if you're just walking around a trade show, unless you have one of those barcode shooter scanners. And even then, you're relying on people holding up their badge and letting you scan them. But when you're interacting with them via automated email, online marketing, advertising, everything that you do is measurable and therefore decisionable. You can actually make a decision based on the information that you're getting.
Yeah, I completely agree with the measurability aspect of the marketing automation. But I actually want to go back to the story and I want to touch on one more point there. And that is going to be your comment related to the spam, right? So in my mind, when I look at the spam and typically the way people perceive spam, if I don't need something, and I think you mentioned this as well, right? That, you know, if I'm not looking for something right now, and if you target me, then that is probably going to be a spam, even though it is not a spam, right? So identifying right. that purchase signal is always going to be difficult, irrespective of whether you are targeting the new customers or the existing customer. And if finding the purchase signal was so easy, irrespective of whether you are cold calling or doing the marketing automation, the challenge is going to be similar. So how are you able to identify the purchase signal in case of marketing automation when technically none of the channels can do that as confidently?
Right. So the part of the answer is by adjusting the amount of touch points that you have, which gives you more data to play with. So if I send a message out, or if I'm doing an advertising campaign and I expect that I'm going to reach 100 people, that doesn't really give me a lot of data. But if I try to reach 25,000 people, that's going to be a much more actionable set of data. One of the other things that we need to do is kind of just act on good faith and know that our people, our best prospects, are going to be searching for us at some time in the near future. So I teach courses for Google. I'm actually one of 12 people in the country that's authorized to speak on behalf of Google about search engine optimization. And here's what the engineers at Google are actually telling me. Your best bet, and if we could optimize, or if I could wrap up search engine optimization or SEO in one sentence, it's be as useful as possible to your audience whenever possible. So having a deep bench of helpful information is going to give you many more touch points, many more options, many more ways for that person to enter into your sales funnel or engage with you than it is if you just try to be super targeted every time. So our job as revenue drivers for our organization is simply to be as useful as possible to the people that need our services.
Yeah.
And that's much easier to do digitally than it ever has been before. Eventually, trade shows and things are going to come back and we're going to be able to do these. I think the way people are interact with trade shows is going to be different no matter what. We're going to have a lot of different touch points and everything's going to be more measurable, more connectable. And we're going to focus on having a fairly low bar for people to clear to start an automated conversation. And what I mean by a low bar to clear is you're probably not, even when we were at trade shows, we weren't walking around and saying, hey, can I get your credit card number? Because I want to double check to make sure that you're a qualified candidate. Or hey, can I have your social security number? Or whatever that is, right? What you're asking people is, hey, if you're interested in our services, grab this sticker or this mug or whatever. And in trade for that, I just want to be able to scan your pass so that I can send you some follow-up information later. That bar that you ask people to cross needs to be equal in value to the content that you're giving them, right? So if I'm giving away a car, I can ask a lot more questions than if I'm just giving away a pencil or if I'm just letting them sign up for my email newsletter, right? Email newsletter, the best you're going to get is their email address. If you're giving away a car, you can probably ask a whole bunch of signals and see what they're actually interested in. And you can be much more integrated and interactive right from square one. So it needs to match the value of what you're asking for. But then you also straight just need to go right back to how can I make the process that they're going through in their buyer's journey as they're looking for and researching if I'm a good fit for them, how can I make it as easy as possible for them to find what they're looking for, to understand that I'm the best solution for them, and to feel reassured that they can trust that I'm going to deliver on the promise that I'm making?
So let's go back to your comment about the volume. And this is probably going back to my earlier question related to where the spot is going to be fit, right? So you mentioned that the purchase signal is going to be slightly superior if you have, let's say, a lot more data points. So let's say if you're sending the email to 25,000 people, right, you are probably going to be in slightly stronger position to be able to tell which customers are going to buy. And if you had only the 100 customers, probably you'll not be as confident, right? So obviously, the marketing automation is going to be a data game. The more data that you have, the better your campaign is probably going to perform, the more confident you are going to be in refining your campaign, aligning your campaign. So let's go back to my question, right? And the question was, is HubSpot and marketing automation going to be fit in every single situation? Or there are situations in cases where marketing automation may not be fit. For example, let's say if I'm the manufacturer, I'm selling to, let's say, 10 customers. If I'm selling to 10 customers, would marketing automation still make sense? Or I should rather do the plain old cold calling because that personal touch matters a lot. We have come a long way in terms of understanding and appreciating technology, but we are still a long way to appreciate the bots or automated emails just because that just comes across as slightly impersonal, to be honest. So what would be your recommendation in terms of where the HubSpot is going to be fit in which businesses?
Perfect. So for companies that have a captive market and that are basically locked in, all they need to do is say, anybody needs some? And everybody that needs some is going to say yes. Inbound marketing, automated marketing is probably overkill. If you're going to get the business anyway, you probably don't need to do that. However, I would probably argue that for many businesses, those doors are slowly closing and people are being much more thoughtful and the competition is heating up everywhere. I have conversations all the time when I'm doing my own prospecting for BusyWeb, and I ask people, how are you getting your leads? If you're getting your leads through a dedicated system of people, or, you know, just like everybody in the market knows me, or I'm the only person that provides this particular product or service, you kind of have your market set for you, and it's overkill. All you need to do is send out an email to everyone that's on that list and give them the opportunity to keep buying. Or probably at that point, you just have dedicated sales reps that call and fill orders. Conversely, when you do definitely need as much help as possible, is when your particular product or service could be at least perceived as a commodity, or there's lots of other options in the market. So if there's a lot of competition and it's a market where a lot of people can just enter it at any differentiated point without there being a lot of differentiation. So if you're a sheet aluminum provider, there's a lot of places you can probably get sheet aluminum, and there's probably not much difference between those. So what is the thing that's going to get people excited about working with you? Well, it's probably going to be some ancillary service, some other thing that's going to make the process of ordering that sheet aluminum much easier, or it's going to be a value add. And you don't want to race to the bottom on price whenever possible. You instead want to offer more value. And so for businesses that have a lot of options, or for businesses that the competition is strong, and or there's not a lot of reason for that company to obviously be the choice, that's when you need to have a more thoughtful and conversational outreach. You know, we work with a customer that does printed circuit boards or PCBs, and there's a lot of people that help rapid prototype PCBs in all kinds of markets. They happen to be in Silicon Valley, and so it's white hot there. There's a lot of people that are providing that service. What we had to focus on with that customer is there's a lot of added value that you can bring into the purchase process. And then it's our job to identify and illustrate what that added value is, because that's probably what's going to make that purchase decision for someone that's the decision maker, right? So if it's the electrical engineer that's saying, okay, well, we have this switch that's on this tool and we need a circuit board to let it work correctly, how am I going to get that as quickly as possible? Well, there's a way to do that. And so that's what we focus on, is what the added value is. So short version of my long answer to your question, Sam, is if there's no competition, you don't need inbound marketing. If there's a lot of consideration that goes into a marketing or a sales discussion, that's when having a deep well of helpful information that will help lower the friction in the purchase process is going to really bear fruit.
Okay, amazing. That's it for today. Dave, do you have any last minute closing thoughts? By any chance?
The only thing that I'll leave everyone with is know when to raise your hand. A lot of times we tend to think that we've got our market figured out. You know, we've been doing this for 50 years and we're doing everything that we need to. And it's a considered game. So, oh yeah, we just need to update our website. Or you get calls from people saying, well, if you did Google Ads, you would be at the top of Google search results. There's a lot of noise in the market, and knowing and having a trusted advisor to help you actually convert leads can be incredibly powerful in the sales process for your business. There's a lot of people out there, and I have an uphill battle every day whenever I contact someone, because there's a lot of people that aren't that trustworthy in the marketing game, or they just work their system and they guarantee it. If you Google SEO, there's millions of results. But it's the difference in knowing how to make this work for you, and not just having a brochure website that talks all about you and doesn't focus on your customer at all, and having a thoughtful, conversational experience that's going to let your customer warm themselves up and be ready for a purchase by the time they call you.
Okay, amazing. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be, obviously in the sales and marketing world, there's always going to be a noise, but marketing, if done right, then that can be incredibly powerful. So on that note, I want to thank you for your time, Dave. This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Dave or want to sign up for one of his upcoming seminars, head over to busyweb.com/events. It's BIZZYWEB.com/EV. EN www.bizweb.ts. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Jeff White, who discusses why it is so important to identify the ideal customer profile for your offerings to streamline your growth. Also, the interview with Gil Walker, who discusses why CRM is important and how that fits among other systems such as ERP and e-commerce. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.